You are listening to the Green Lantern Corecast, episode number 131. This episode, Novas Be Crazy. This episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/lanterns. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Welcome everyone to the Green Lantern Corps podcast. I'm your host, Frank Mateo, and with me is Colton Clayton.
What's up?
Eric Cahill.
Hello everyone.
Naeem Siddiqui.
Yo.
And Brandon West.
Hey y'all.
And we have a lot of news coming out of San Diego Comic-Con this past week. We have the first footage of Justice League that just aired, and also a certain person's, well, you could say, their big promotion. Brandon, what do we have for us today?
First of all, let's get into some video game news. Everyone's favorite Red Lantern, Atrocitus, will be joining the playable characters in Injustice 2. That'll be on Xbox One. It'll be on PlayStation 4, which I don't have and I wish I bought instead of Xbox One because the loading times are terrible. Atrocitus will be on Injustice 2, complete with Deckstar, and he even has the Red Bull that is the entity, the Red Lantern.
Oh,
entity.
The Butcher.
The Butcher.
Gives him right. Wings.
The Butcher will be part of his power set, so that's definitely something to look forward to. And speaking of Injustice news, we also have Tom Taylor will be back to write the adaptation comic for Injustice 2. He had a very highly praised run. Brian Buccellato took over for Injustice Gods Among Us after Tom, so it's not clear if Brian is out of a job now, but Tom Taylor is definitely back on the series, and that's it for video game news.
They like that Buccellato over there.
They like him a Buccellato. That's terrible.
Jesus.
I'm sorry.
Now we've got to move on.
No, we do have to move on.
You've ended
there.
It.
So good. We also have news about
Justice League Action.
Okay. All right. So Justice League Action news coming out of Comic-Con as well. We got Josh Keaton back as Hal Jordan, Green Lantern. We also got two random Star Trek alumni playing Mr. Rage himself, Atrocitus, of course, played by Michael Dorn from Star Trek The Next Generation. And Zilius Zox will be in the series. He's been racking up appearances recently. He'll be played by Armin Shimmerman, who had the big head in Star Trek. Yeah.
The Frankie,
so,
bro.
Yeah, the Frankie.
Quark, man.
Frankie. Yeah. Of course, Frankie. Star Sapphire, her costume was announced at the convention as well. It's definitely got some big shades of Bruce Timm's design. There's something to look forward to. Every episode will be 15 minutes long, and it will feature very little plot and a lot of action. So there's something to look forward to. Also coming out of Comic-Con is more Justice League news. Justice League, the movie. We got a nice little teaser trailer. Out of that, no Green Lantern. Zero Green Lantern. So I don't know how much you guys want to talk about that. But
I mean, we knew in advance, right, that Green Lantern really wasn't going to be a part of
the
movie.
He's not coming to 2020.
Right. Well, they talked about maybe he's going to be like at the end, or maybe he's going to be in the second, you know, Justice League Part 2. But I was... Right, we knew in advance that he wasn't going to be
in
Justice
League. We knew he wasn't going to be in this movie. Yeah. But
so
we also
surprised.
There was a chairman.
We did get the Green Lantern Corps logo. So the title for their movie coming down in 2020.
I'm thinking that stuff seriously. Yeah. I thought it was a great piece of footage, I guess. I think I'm not really in love with Ezra Miller as Barry doing a bad Peter Parker impersonation, but I know everybody else loved it, so I don't want to get too down on it.
I'm fine with him playing the character he's playing. I don't think it's Ezra Miller's fault that the character he's playing isn't quite really Barry Allen, which is just, I guess.
I think we had a perfectly fine Barry Allen for a couple of years now. But
I'm okay with it being separate. I just think that I'm not really in love with Ezra Miller. I think he's kind of an overactor, but that's just me. Aquaman was as hot as humanly possible. Dear Lord.
Jason Momoa did a fine job as Aquaman in a short time that we saw in Justice League.
Jesus Christ, Momoa. Just Momoa all over the place.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are news we have, Brandon?
We also have Star Trek news. I know Eric and Colton are big Star Trek nerds, so I'll take that to mention as this news is relevant. Now, we're getting a Green Lantern Star Trek crossover again.
Now, Eric, you read the first crossover Star Trek and Green Lantern.
Yeah, I'm a big time Trekkie from the womb, and then I'm actually a really big fan of the Kelvin movies, and I think the Star Trek original, the one they did like 2 years ago, last year, whatever it was, Star Trek Green Lantern, was actually a pretty clever crossover. It looked like they put some real thought into, like, let's use the Kelvin timeline crew, let's use Hal Jordan, let's not use any other space heroes. It was this storyline where Hal and several of the other Lanterns were the only surviving Lanterns from an alternate DC universe that had been destroyed by Necron. It was one of those stories where I'm personally someone who hates all the multicolored core, but I enjoyed it in this story. A lot of fun, really cool crossover. I'm excited to see where they're going to go here. Though the news they announced was that they were going to add some more space characters and stuff into it, things that don't really sound that interesting, but I have faith in the creative team, and I think it's going to be pretty cool.
Is it going to be the same Star Trek cast, or are they going to go like a Next Gen or something like that?
No, it's still the Kelvin. It's still the Kelvin.
And
Chris,
by the way,
Pines.
If you're not a Trekkie like Eric, the Kelvin crew is the one from the current movies.
The J.J. Abrams movie.
iPad Star Trek.
Yeah.
If you don't know that, you don't need to listen to me because you don't exist to me, so don't worry about it.
I mean, honestly, I just pick it up from context. I've never heard that nomenclature, which is a good nomenclature.
That's so sad. What do you like? Live in a cave? That's so sad.
And now we're getting a new Star Trek that's going back to the old continuity.
Star Trek Discovery, whatever. Yeah.
I think Green Lantern and Star Trek is kind of the ultimate mishmash. I think you could have done a better storyline, really, that's more in continuity with both universes. But what they did was pretty clever. It was kind of cool. They made a decision to kind of pick one angle, and they went with it. I think, as a matter of fact, Star Trek and Green Lantern, like I said, they're the two out of all the crossoverable properties that DC could have with an outside universe kind of thing. It's kind of a no-brainer. It's weird that it took so long to
happen. Makes the most sense.
I wonder how many Steve Trevor jokes there are going to be.
You know, as a matter of fact, apparently that was like the big to-do about it when it first came out. Bleeding Cool swore to God that Chris Pine was either going to be under contract as Hal Jordan or as Steve Trevor. And so that was kind of the whole joke as to why the crossover happened in the first place. They were going to have alternate covers of Chris Pine in two different costumes and stuff. I think that's all a bunch of bullshit because Bleeding Cool is like 50%, 100% accurate, 50% pulls it right out of their ass onto the floor. But still a cool idea to think about.
All right. Brandon, what else we got?
Sorry. What's the over under on?
Go ahead. The over under on how many asses are on the floor? Sure. Is that what you were going for?
Sure. Yeah. I'm gonna
put it at 6.5.
50%
half asses.
All right.
Yeah, 50% the asses.
I'll take the under on that.
speaking of Discovery, I guess Carly Pope will be playing Susan Williams. Who is Susan Williams? Susan Williams is Hal Jordan's freaking sister, right?
Williams is Hal Jordan's sister-in-law. Married to his younger brother.
Susan Williams.
Well, you know, Arrow has as someone who was a big, huge, 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 huge fan of Arrow until the last 2 years when it was terrible. But, Arrow has had a long history with kind of flirting with Green Lantern properties because obviously it's based on Green Arrow, and Green Arrow and Green Lantern have a history in the comics. And at end of one of the seasons, the big cliffhanger was that Oliver in his flashbacks to when he was training to become Green Arrow was going to go to Coast City, and everybody was, oh, that's going to be so exciting. And one of the actors who plays a brand new character for the show named John Diggle had been trying for years to convince the press that he was actually going to play John Stewart until finally DC put a kibosh on that. But Arrow is the latest show to kind of run into that whole DC embargo thing. I'm sure you guys, everybody's heard of it. The reason that Colton was
DC discussing television embargo.
Right. The reason Colton was discussing there being two Flashes is kind of the uniqueness of the situation where DC used to tell the Justice League TV shows they couldn't bring up Batman. They used to tell Smallville they couldn't bring up certain aspects of Superman because they had franchises in the movies and stuff. And Arrow has had that a lot with Suicide Squad and with certain elements of Green Lantern. But they've, like I said, besides John Diggle not being John Stewart, even though the actor wanted it to be, Oliver Queen going to Coast City, but ultimately not doing anything there. He was immediately captured and sent onto a spy mission.
And then Barry Allen at some point like ran to Coast City to get some pizza.
Yeah, Coast City is constantly mentioned. That show is all about the Easter eggs, that universe. But also Hal Jordan himself had a cameo of sorts in an episode of Arrow. When Oliver goes to Coast City, he's in a bar and someone walks across frame and you see their chest and they're wearing that unnecessarily origined bomber jacket that Hal Jordan wears in the Geoff Johns comics. And there's a name tag that says Jordan across it. So he walks across screen with no face. It's like a cute little Easter egg. So bringing in Hal Jordan's future sister-in-law, people are thinking it's a tag. Oh, more Green Lantern stuff is coming. It's just not true because the show also loves to take characters like Felicity Smoke, who is Firestorm's mother-in-law, and make her, you know, if not the most important, the second most important character in the show, when she has no intrinsic history with the comic book canon. So don't get too excited, Green Lantern fans.
Yeah, and Vibe didn't have anything to do until season two when he sort of became more Vibe and Killer Frost, same thing.
Right. Now, my whole thing with this, I've never really gotten the whole thing about the embargo. It's like, why constrain a series when they could tell a good story just for the sake of, we don't want money things?
On some level, constraints can make a better story, and then on some level, like once you get to 10 seasons of Smallville, like, you know, in the first 4 seasons of Smallville, the constraint maybe made a better story. Once you're getting to now he's like 35 years old and he's still not Superman, then you're, but I will say the embargo, like, is also another thing about the leniency there is they did also announce the casting of Superman for Supergirl, which is again, definitely they're laxing up on that, so maybe we will see some of these, you know, Justice League type characters appearing in the TV shows.
I mean, like, how long did it take for them to get the Joker in Justice League
in the cartoon?
And he was only in a couple of a few seasons, and then he wasn't,
which was criminal because he was a great character.
Yes, but again, using an easy cheat like putting the Joker into any episode, again, much like how, you know, Naim said, is where to have constraints. You have more self-contained stories, more thinking around the box instead of just going like, let's go with our most popular character.
Like, I would say it's
Justice League. They should be able to tap into whatever franchise.
Constraining, because then you can't use the Joker a lot. But anyway, that's we don't need to talk about this necessarily.
There is one more. Well, sorry. There is one more thing about embargoes that I think people overlook a lot. And Smallville is a good example of this because they were still constrained as the show went on for certain characters they couldn't use, but they needed to, in order to increase the audience or to be comic book relevant, to add in more DC characters. So what they would do is they would kind of go to the bottom of, not, I don't want to say the bottom of the barrel, but scrape the well a little bit. Like, you saw the live action Legion of Superheroes, you saw an entirely assembled Justice Society, and now all of a sudden Hawkman is kind of a given for live action adaptions and stuff. Now all of a sudden, you know, it's possible to see future Legion of Superheroes and Supergirl. It just, what's good about it is if you're a fan of some hardcore DC stuff, you're going to see it on these shows because they're not allowed to use Batman. You'll see Dr. Midnight on
Green Arrow became a much bigger deal because they as a Batman proxy, so they,
and as
they,
someone who, yeah, exactly, someone who's been a fan of Green Arrow my whole life, then it's until season three, it was so exciting to see that be live action, even on Smallville. So there are ups and downs to it, but as you said, but it cannot be denied that Superman being on Supergirl is awesome, regardless of who they cast and how the costume looks.
I think that's sort of huge for this whole embargo thing. Is like that's one of the big things. They weren't using these big movie people. They couldn't have Tom Welling wearing the Superman suit because they're about to make a Brandon Routh movie at some point. So
it's kind of annoying at that point.
Whatever,
but the fact that
Tyler Hoechlin's wearing the suit is, well, now that maybe, you know, a lot more blurring, and the fact that there's a Barry Allen on TV and a Barry Allen in the movie, like, I think that's cool that now it and on some level it's cool to have the constraints, because at some level it does do better stories, but on the other hand it's cool to not have the constraints as much either, because then maybe you can get sort of, you know, maybe now you're realizing people aren't quite
and can
separate these two things.
Totally get that.
Yeah, and then it also killed the Black Canary.
Brandon,
so
you were going to say something else, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we also got a big piece of news just last night. Geoff Johns, DC Entertainment's chief creative officer, is getting a big promotion, a huge promotion. He's, in fact, president of DC Entertainment. As you guys already knew, Diane Nelson was already president of DC Entertainment. And it's weird because they're not co-presidents. They're just literally just two presidents. She also serves as president of Warner Brothers Consumer Products and president officer of Warner Brothers Interactive. So it's not clear what Jeff's new promotion entails, but he definitely just got a pay raise.
Yeah, right.
He was already given a promotion as co-head of DC Films in May. So
that just means we can all speculate that he pretty much has a little bit more say into what goes on into the DC, you know, extended universe.
I think the idea, I don't know if this is going to be the execution, but I think the idea is for him to be sort of the Kevin Feige of the DC universe.
Sure. Which a lot of people already associated him with.
Thinking he was for years. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but which I think it makes sense. Whatever your feelings about Geoff Johns, I think this is a dude who has a vision of the DC universe that is sort of more in line than I mean, so, I don't want to shit on Batman v Superman, but like the vision that sort of Zack Snyder has is maybe different than the DC Comics vision, which is and John's, you know, going from he was and remains the chief creative officer at DC Comics and president of DC Comics. So I think ties more the comic and film side of the things. He also has worked on the TV shows. He's written on Smallville, Arrow, and The Flash. So I think that's interesting as well to have this guy.
Yeah, but this also leaves a lot of people saying that there's going to be a lot of weight and a lot of responsibility onto this guy's shoulders. Like, you know, just to be put on the spot of
he's the bald guy now.
That's true.
Oh, he's pretty much, if anything goes wrong, anyone can literally say it was all Geoff Johns' fault.
Well, considering they've given him three promotions that have made him the fall guy in the last 3 years, then I think it's just more of that.
Yeah, and really, like, nobody's really like, and you know, maybe it's Peter Principle of taking this guy and continuing to promote him above his head. I don't know if it's a. I mean, I'm not. You know, I don't want to say anything about cast aspersions about Geoff Johns right now. But you know, he hasn't fallen as the fall guy at any real point. You know, like there's right. obviously there's a subset of people, including users on the Intercore message boards and some of us. You know, and some of our friends who don't like what Geoff Johns is doing or has done with the universe. But for the most part, people really love Geoff Johns. So I mean, like the majority of people, I think a lot of, we have you know through the years said a lot of things negative about Geoff Johns and some of the stuff he's done in the universe.
We also cannot deny he has had a lot of bright spots. He's done a lot of resurgence.
Absolutely,
in the books.
And I think we're in the minority as far as not liking some of that stuff. Like Flashpoint, if you look in like the Reddit threads for Flash TV, like people are super hype about Flashpoint, and I don't think any of us liked it at all. So
well, here's my thing. I think to your point, that's true to a certain extent, but I think that's really the issue is why. Geoff Johns, I was very vocal about in early incarnations about disliking the work the guy did in the books, and I think he really drove Green Lantern into the ground and just wasn't a lot of very plot oriented guy.
But I think conceptually out of the ground, right?
Like, right. Well, yeah. So, I mean, in terms of popularity, but I think, but also read stuff like Secret Origins, and you can tell the guy really knows what he's doing. But he also, he's a big concept guy. So essentially, I think what he's doing right now might have been where he always should have been. And as someone who like watched Smallville, and I would watch his iterations of Smallville, and he was leaning more towards the comics, which is away from the show, and that didn't help the show. And to your point about, but then also you watch the current shows on the air, he is far removed from Arrow and has actually kind of thrown some shade its way, but he's still sort of involved in Flash and Supergirl and stuff. And I think Batman vs. Superman, I think he was more involved than we would like to admit if we didn't like that movie. I like that movie a lot, but I think, you know, he was announced as a co-writer on the Wonder Woman movie. So he will have it. This finally seems like the clear indication that we've all thought for the last 5 years that he really is involved intrinsically in all of the properties. You know, I think everybody's like, oh, it'll be better this time. But it's like, I mean, I remember when Green Lantern was coming out. I remember Geoff Johns was like on the press roll as much as anybody who actually worked on the movie, you know, so I don't I know what I kind of like Green Lantern, but I know where the failure is. And I don't think it's necessarily. I think the guy has a lot of hits and a lot of misses, but I think where he is right now is where he should be, because I think what the output that DC's putting out creatively with the TV shows and the animated series and the movies and stuff is finally diverse. Like the embargoes are moving around. Justice League Action is a cool idea. You know, Killing Joke is nonsense, but like, you know, you're seeing more of that. I just think he is where he should be as a concept guy, because that's what he should do. He should go in there and say, yeah, the character is this, this, and this, and under my watch, they never would have killed the fucking Black Canary. Like, you know, things like that, that as now an older comic.
I mean, that's what got him the job.
Right.
When DC Entertainment was just an idea, they brought in Grant Morrison, Geoff Johns, and Marv Wolfman. Those were the guys they went to. And Jeff Johns got the job because he pitched them what the DC Entertainment should be. And it shouldn't come as any surprise that he is where he is now.
Yeah. And I mean, again, we hate, you know, yes, half the people hate Batman vs. Superman. But like, you have to admit that there's so much about that movie, even if you hate it, that really works and really makes people excited for the next kind of iterations and stuff. And man, we saw the footage for Justice League, that trailer for Wonder Woman. You don't want to get hyped about this kind of stuff. I'm old. I don't give a shit about that kind of stuff anymore. I admit to a little bit of leaky hype over that stuff, you know. So as much as I've hated the guy on the guy in the past, I think this is where he should be, and I'm kind of optimistic about the future of the franchises.
I completely agree with you. Yeah, you know, I agree with what you're saying. But pretty much, I believe that pretty much covers everything like that just came out of San Diego Comic-Con, right, Brandon?
I believe so.
So we're gonna move on from here and go into our reviews of the new issues that just came out for Green Lantern and Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps, and give you our thoughts on that. Beginning everything, we're gonna start with the brand new Green Lanterns, and written by Sam Humphries and drawn by Robson Rocha. I believe that's how you say his name.
I believe so. Yeah.
Robson Rocha.
I don't know. You're the Hispanic one.
I'm doubling down, making sure I know people's names here. I don't want to, you know.
Is it Rocha or Rocha?
Might be Rocha. You're right.
Might be Rocha.
So, starting off with his the brand new arc that's going on with Green Lantern. It's called Red Rage Planet. Very first issue that just dropped with the two partners with Simon Baz and Jessica Cruz. Pretty much like rolling the ball from where Green Lantern's rebirth, when the rebirth line just like started out. And just going from there, I really want hear your thoughts on what's going on with that. Eric.
It's going to be cliche to say, but I'm going to say that this is the issue that they should have started. This is the issue Rebirth should have been. I've kind of ragged on the Rebirth because I think this really introduces the concept really strongly. I think out of the rotating artists, I think that the energy was really there, what you needed. I mean, essentially, they kind of just made it a cop book, you know, when it opened. But they set up the cop book aspect. They set up the different aspects of the government agency being involved. They set up a little bit better of the characters. I mean, they were showing a lot more personal here than they were in the Rebirth book. I've kind of come around to understand that the Rebirth books weren't what they really should have been. They should have been introductions, but what they were was kind of essentially setting up new continuities and acknowledging the issues that had come before, where the number ones are kind of the new stories, and that's kind of DC's boneheaded move. But either way, I was actually really happy with this issue versus the other issues. I still think Jessica's personality is a little off, considering she's supposed to be so agoraphobic. This is like her first month out of an apartment in 3 years. She's kind of just being treated as any other teenage girl, which I'm not even sure she's a teenager, but I'm liking that they're kind of pushing Simon Baz. We made a big joke about him being Fast and Furious Dom Toretto, but I guess we're realizing, is there, having not watched Fast and Furious, is there a Dom Toretto type character, but that's also wild and crazy? I guess he's more like Michelle Rodriguez in the Fast and Furious.
I'm pretty sure the Dom Toretto like character who's wild and crazy is Dominic Toretto.
But he's all stoic and monotone and granite like. So I mean, like, yeah, someone who actually has a personality.
Until he's behind a wheel, right? And then he's wild and crazy. That's the idea.
I mean, those movies.
We can clearly see that Hal Jordan is Dominic Toretto of the Green Lantern franchise, while Simon Baz is more the Paul Walker.
No, I'm pretty sure that's the other way around. I'm pretty sure Hal Jordan is the Paul Walker.
John Stewart is really to it, I think.
Anyway, sorry.
As the cliffhanger at the end of the issue isn't great, I think the concept of what they find at the beginning, where they're essentially fighting a crime that is alien related. I think for me, I always thought the Green Lanterns were cool because they were space cops. And this is like the first time I've seen them do space copping in like the 40,000 years we've been doing this podcast. So I'm actually pretty excited about the first issue. Cliffhanger at the end was kind of lame. But for a biweekly issue, I would have bought it. Yeah.
All right. Calden, what do you think of the issue? What would you give it?
I thought it was a pretty solid issue. I mean, it had been a while since I had gotten to read Green Lantern. Some of us had taken our long breaks, so maybe my time away has kind of influenced this, but I'm feeling really optimistic here. I would definitely recommend reading it. Just at least give it a shot if you haven't read Green Lantern in a while, because I think it's a good start. It's a promising start.
Yeah, what would you say? Buy, borrow, or pass?
It's only $3. I'd say buy.
That's a fair, fair assessment. Brandon, what do you think?
I gotta borrow this because coming off the Rebirth, I thought I'd get a grander scheme of what Atrocitus was going to do, and there'd be some big, gigantic plot that would, you know, blow me away. And I feel like it was more retread of the Rebirth issue than anything else. I felt like what Eric said, that Jessica was a bit more open than she should have been. If she's scared of people, she's scared to be in the supermarket, but, you know, she's, you know, just as fine with an alien. She should be freaking out more than worried about whether her ring works, you know? And it's just those subtleties that just took me out of the issue. And I don't know. I just was not impressed. The art did not catch you. The story just was, I guess I'm waiting on something to happen, and it's just not happening fast enough. This first issue felt like it was a step in the wrong direction for me. Right. But it wasn't like the worst thing I ever read, so borrow it if you can.
Okay, so your verdict is borrow. Naim, what do you think?
Yeah, I would probably, you know what, I'd probably give it a buy. I think the thing is, I probably would have given Rebirth a pass. We did an episode on that, and that never ended up being released, so it's a little hard to talk about. I think, you know, I agree with Eric on some level that this did what Rebirth should have done a little bit better. I think it really explained sort of what's going on a little bit better, did a little bit more of show don't tell than Rebirth did. So I like some of that stuff. I will say, on some level, and we didn't talk a lot about Jessica Cruz, at least because I don't think Jessica Cruz is even around the last, you know, 2 years ago when we last did a podcast, like a real one. But it's a little weird that she spent 3 years in her apartment and still is built like a supermodel. So that's I don't know how much, like, does she just have like a treadmill and a workout machine in her apartment?
A lot of calisthenics.
Also, she does puke when she sees the alien, so that's on some level. But I will agree that I mean, and this is, I think, the problem with a lot of comics, where they give a character like this sort of thing, like the agoraphobia, or you know, I can't think of that, it's like something else off the top of my head, but they'll give a character something that should affect them, you know, throughout the book, and they'll only like sort of bring it up like every couple of issues, like, oh yeah, BT Dub, she's too agoraphobic to be in the supermarket, even though she was not demonstrating that before.
She does say it 30 or 40 times, but that's all she does. She just kind of says it. It's almost like the writer wants to remind us that she's an issue, but doesn't want to do anything.
And I think that's, you know, they try to do something in the comic where it's like, oh, let, you know, and obviously it wasn't the writer of this book, who was Sam Humphries, who gave her the agoraphobia, you know, that existed in beforehand. But they'll give a character something like agoraphobia or something like that, and then they won't really like delve into that at all when the character's doing their superhero stuff. Only like, oh, now it's Secret Identity, so now we should mention the thing about this character that is important. So it's you know, that's I don't think that's a problem just in this. I think that's a problem in a lot of media. It's not just comic books either, where they'll be like, oh, yep, here's this character who's autistic when we want him to be.
Can I interrupt you for a second?
Absolutely, go ahead.
I shit on the art. I didn't mean to shit on the art. I thought the art was pretty good.
I
just didn't want to go without saying that the art wasn't as bad as I probably made it seem.
I will say say it was inconsistent enough that I thought it was two artists.
We could bring that up into the next issue, but I didn't want to say for a number one issue, I will give it a rating of buy. Like it's does a lot, pretty much like what you were saying, much like what Eric was saying. It is very much, you know, like what Rebirth number one should have been more about. But again, Rebirth number one gave us pretty much what, you know, the setup, and this pretty much just followed through. Sam Humphries, again, not the creator of either of these characters, Simon Bass and Jessica Cruz, were both created by Geoff Johns, like during his Justice League run and Green Lantern run, like respectively. And he's pretty much like, you know, taking the ball of, okay, these are all their nicks and knacks, and I'm going to have to like throw, you know, just become familiarized with these characters. You know, Simon Baz is very much, you know, chip on the shoulders, just trying to do everything fast, trying to do everything like, you know, like forcefully as he can, because he's trying to prove himself. Jessica Cruz is very hard on herself, not knowing what, you know, whether or not she could make it as a Green Lantern, but she talks about Flash a lot in these issues. And it seems like it's working towards a good goal. Like the end result maybe comes in the first issue, is a good buy, I would say. It's, you know, just just to, like, you know, just get the ball rolling, especially into, like, issue number two, which we were going to get into. Again, written by Sam Humphries, drawn by Robson Rocha, but also drawn by Tom Derenick?
Issue two is penciled by Rocha and inks by Jay Lystein, colored by Blonde the whole time.
Yep. Stays the same.
I didn't want to go without introducing myself, but so this one as well, I think I would probably give a buy to as well. I think you do get a little bit of good stuff sort of in the background of Jessica. You get a little bit more moving on to, you know, the story actually progresses, which is interesting as they learn what's going on, as Simon Baz sort of shows that he has been with the Corps, not a very long time, but a little bit longer than Jessica, so he has learned some things. But I will say this issue as well was a little bit inconsistent with the art, and maybe it's just that Robson Rocha isn't all that great with drawing people outside of superhero costumes, because I legitimately, after I finished this issue, I went back to the beginning of the issue to see who drew the flashback sequence of you know, the last night with Jessica and her sister, and it was Rocha. So I was very confused as to how this one artist in two issues in a row seemed like it was two different artists. And we'll talk about in issue three that it was like five artists or whatever. But for the most part, the art was good. And then there's some points where it's like, oh, this is starting to cross into Top Cow territory, which is not necessarily a bad thing. I don't know. Robson Rocha might have even done Top Cow. I'm not really sure. But you know, like especially in the last night, you know, suburb stuff, it really looked like Top Cow school art. And I was like, and nothing else really did. Yeah, issue two. But I mean, for the most part, though, I liked the story and I liked most of the art. And I did. You know, the colors and inks were all good. So I will also give this one probably a buy it.
Hey, Brandon,
I'd agree. I definitely agree. I thought this was a stark improvement over issue one and the rebirth issue. I thought this was and we'll go a little behind the curtain and get into the GreenLanternCorps.com forum, where you can discuss these issues with a million other Green Lantern fans. A lot of sentiment is that Jessica's being handled way better than Simon right now. And I thought this issue proved it. This issue was all about Jessica, and rightfully so, as she is the newer of the two. And it did well for the character. I thought the supermarket scene was great. I thought her interaction with Simon was great. And the art was good. I don't think I saw a complete difference like Naim did between the beginning and the end of the issue. But I thought it was smooth all the way through. Solid buy for me.
Well, I would say I think the end and the beginning were the same. Just the very middle seemed pretty different, but...
Just the scene with the sister?
Yeah, just the scene with the sister in the middle seemed like that was a different artist. And I thought it was weird that it was the same person, but whatever.
All right, Calden, what do you think of issue two?
It's a solid continuation that's important. It's like, this is all clearly just, you know, standard, probably going, I don't know, it's not the regular three-arc thing, maybe they're going for a six-arc mini thing, but at this point, I don't see really anything too different from the traditional trade waiting setup that they've done. But that said, you know, for like, you know, middle of a started story we just had, I thought it was good. And maybe not blow your mind good, but, you know, there were some nice character moments, and they're starting to build up this team dynamic, which I don't know how much has been built up before at this point because, you know, I was on a break for a while. But for what it is, you know, there's potential for some good team moments. A little buddy cop.
All right, what would you give it? A buy, borrow, pass?
How about Byro?
Byro. Okay.
All right.
All right. That's a...
All right.
No.
That's fine. For Colton, that's fine.
That's just a Byro. That's just a borrow. Yeah. I mean, if you don't know if you're going to spend your money on it or not...
It's a Byro.
Like, going with a buddy. Like, you know, have a buddy pay $2 and you pay $1 and you can share the issue.
No. A Byro is...
I'll go halvesies on an issue.
Borrow the book.
Go halvesies. That's fine.
Yeah, just rip it in half.
Hey, Eric, what do you think of the issue?
You know what? I mean, I think what you guys are getting at is interesting because I think they're writing for the trade is deadly, because I feel like sometimes you can do that and nothing can happen in an issue and you could love it. Like, I was a huge fan of Brian Bendis for many, many years. One of my favorite comic book runs ever is the Ultimate Spider-Man that he did with Mark Bagley. And so many issues, nothing happened, and so much waiting for the trade kind of right. But because of the way he wrote the issues, it was just gorgeous. You're really just getting into the story, into the characters, really enjoying it. People would sit and talk for four pages, and you'd be very entertained. This felt a lot like treading water because it's a bi-weekly book. And would you guys talk about the art? And I think it's almost like amazing that Roach's art is so good, consider and how detailed and like the horrific monstrosities of these Red Lanterns and stuff, and really getting into the gory stuff, which is probably why they picked him for the series. It's almost amazing that he has that level of detail considering it's a bi-weekly book. But, you know, obviously, the guy draws like six issues ahead and stuff. But I think some of the inconsistencies you might be talking about with that, I think for the flashback, he was kind of like, this is the most boring shit to draw in the world. Just two girls who look identical. Are they twins? Like, they're identical, except they have slightly different hair. I'm not going to bother because everyone's going to look at that fucking hate tower. You know, like, yes, right. That's what I'm looking at. So I think, you know, that's an issue with it. But I think I think it's too filler than not. I think the sequence in the supermarket where Jessica is trying to make a contract is interesting because it's you know, creating this contract.
I honestly wanted to bring that up, too. The fact that he made a conscious choice of making Jessica Cruz not able to create a construct was actually a good part in the story.
It's cool. My only problem is because you read these for so long, you're such old hat that you're like, okay, this just means that in a pivotal moment, she's going to make a contract. It's going to be very important. And you're going to kind of roll your eyes at it, you know, just because essentially now it's like Chekhov's gun. Like, they put it in the middle of the room and it's not suspenseful, you just know. But I think the actual sequence itself where she's making it, you know, it kind of dragged, wasn't that interesting. It was kind of interesting she didn't do it. It was kind of like, why did you waste four pages on it for her not to do it? But if you're talking about pacing the story out for the kind of emotional impact, I get it. It just didn't hit home for me. But the art was awesome. Like, somebody actually drawing someone trying to do a construct, I mean, that was a great way to do it. Like, a little, I mean, especially the coloring really popped off on it. This little like moldy clay thing she was trying to imagine was pretty cool. And I think, like I said, I think the monsters and stuff are looking great. I think the art's looking great. It just was too much of a filler issue. I liked the part where Jessica and her sister were hashing it out, like that the art wasn't that great on those two, three pages. But the problem with it is it kind of comes smack dab in the middle. And like I said, we kind of was in for the Rebirth issue. So you should hit the ground running, do a lot of action, do origin catch up later. That's fine. But now that we're in the second issue, I mean, maybe I understand this is what they're doing. They're trying to leave it to breathe, but it's kind of a weird bit. Like, she's like, I'm about to be eaten by a giant sand monster. What was I doing last night? Oh, yeah, making toast. Like, you know, it's like it's not as exciting to go back and watch this really interesting moment. You know, and it goes back to, like, what do the Green Lanterns do for a living? They think us as fans, they think people really don't care about how these guys tie their shoes. But, like, essentially, that's all we should care about, you know, because we know they're going to fight Atrocitus. We know they're going to win. We know he's going to shake his fist and get off. I'm like, oh, I'll see you guys and get off, I guess. But, like, also shake his fist and say Green Lanterns, and the day is going to be saved. What we should care about is what the characters go through in the interim. Like, so Jessica and agoraphobic using a Green Lantern ring is a fascinating topic that the writer maybe doesn't have that much interest in. And even this, the most introspective moment for her character so far in the run, it was cool, and I could get why some people would think it was funny, and I appreciate the energy and the relationship she has with her ring, because now it's like a one of those Earth to – I can't believe I'm saying Earth to Echo. Like, the millions of movies about friendly kid robots from outer space that came out when I was a kid, and the only fucking one I can remember is Earth to Echo. But it's like the Earth to Echo type thing where it's like, oh, funny robot, tell me more about the world. And, like, with his non-robot emotions, he's going to teach you what it is to speak. And I get it. I'm having fun with all those angles. I just don't think the writers bring it home for me. One thing I hope somebody else mentions is that it really bothers me that Simon stole that teddy bear. Like, he just straight up steals it. Like,
I was actually going to bring that up. But before that, Eric, what do you give this issue?
Oh, I apologize. I would definitely just borrow it because, I mean, the art is great and everything, but, like, you don't even need this part. You could skip this issue completely, and now that I know what issue 3 is like, you can move right on to it.
Oh, that's
and you don't
so
really have
wrong.
A regular story.
I was going to say, I did like the fact that Simon Bass actually, like, you know, runs a monster, like a truck, through a wall. So, like, you know, it gets, as we were talking about before, how much we want Simon Bass to be, like, Dominic Toretto of the Fast and Furious fan. He actually makes a car, runs it through, and literally does wheelies into a fucking, you know, a Walmart or whatever it is. And, yeah. You know,
he lives his life a quarter battery at a time.
Yeah, DC's, you know, rendition of one. And he, you know, it's good. It's a interesting dynamic between the two characters. There was a little bit more banter in this issue, you know, than there were in any other ones. And I liked it. I liked it a lot. I give it a buy. I do give it a buy. I love the artwork, cause, you know, because it's like, especially as you were pointing out, the monster designs were great. Most of the, you know, his character design. He does do a good negative space, like every now and then, but, you know, also agreeing with, like, with Nime. there are certain parts that it doesn't seem that he knows how to draw someone outside of a skin tight suit, because everyone's wearing very skin tight shirts.
And I think Eric makes a good point that maybe that's just like what he's more interested in, right?
That's so true.
Like
he's,
they made a like it is boring. I don't want to look at it.
I get it. I think that makes sense. I think it's a good theory.
But. I can assume he does a lot more still life drawings and a lot more like, you know, contours of body types than actually drawing shirts on them. Like,
well, that's weird because the last issue in the supermarket, if you look at everybody in the background, they're wearing baggy clothes.
Well, the sister's kind of
clothes. I mean, those jeans are skin tight on her.
Yeah, they're definitely wearing.
She is a girl.
Definitely wearing leggings. Yeah, they're wearing jeggings. But they weren't.
You were saying, Eric.
No real faces and covered in emo. I do want to say, before we get back to the next guy, I apologize, but I want to say to Brandon's point, I think he's correct that obviously this issue is going back to Jessica, and I think he's right that Jessica is the more interesting of the two because she is the newer one and stuff. But I also think that Simon is also new, so that's part of the angle. So, yeah, it should be more about her.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to move on to like...
Can I just rebuttal? How could you say that like you found it interesting... Mm-hmm. That we spent time with Jessica. But give it a borrow when, and then you say that you like this stuff.
You
when
could lose the issue.
Take this time. Like, if I think you're looking too far forward. If you're saying, oh well, down the road, this isn't going to play.
Are you
with.
Criticizing his rating?
No. I think it's a good point because that should be the point of the. I appreciate it. I think the problem with the issue is that essentially all that happens at the issue is that Jessica is still trapped in the supermarket. She tries to stop her sister, doesn't. Simon stops her, and then they fly out of the supermarket and realize that the Red Lancers are still attacking. Now, as much as we got some introspection in her, I don't think I like all the angles. I'm having fun with all the kind of interactions the characters are having. It wasn't worth it for me to I think it's almost like he knew he had to do it, so he does it. I don't care. So this definitely felt like a filler issue in terms of the main plot. And if you're going to spend 2 pages on introspective stuff and another 18 on they get into a fight in the supermarket and no one wins, then it for me, it's a waste of time. You could have cut those 2 pages. Yeah, go ahead.
I just felt like the action in this issue did just as much good as the out of costume pages we got.
The introspective stuff.
Yeah, the introspective, all the angst and the drama.
Now remember, Brandon, he didn't give it a bar. He didn't give it a pass.
No, but he. Yeah.
How dare you not love this issue?
It's okay.
And only kind of like it.
Leave him alone, guys.
Let's move on. Yeah, from this one, we're gonna move on to like the third issue.
Yeah, third issue.
Rage Planet Part 3, and this is the one that I unfortunately mistook for Part 2. Where there are more artists in this issue. There are 4 artists in this issue, and that's why maybe the artwork gets
four inkers.
We have and 4 inkers. We have Tom Derenick, Robson Rocha, Jack Herbert, and Neil Edwards are penciling this issue
with inks by Tom
along
Palmer,
with Tom,
and Jay Light.
Tom
Palmer,
Palmer.
Yeah.
Sorry, Tom Palmer, Jay Leistein, and Hubert and Keith Champagne.
We've known a lot. I think Jack Herbert did his own inks. But
no offense to Neil Edwards, but every time I see his name, it's always filling in for somebody, and it's never good.
Hey, Brandon, let's start you off. What do you think of this issue, Brandon?
Is there something worse than past, fellas? I mean, Jesus. This was, all right, you can tell right off the
bat. First off, you've been in the past.
Absolutely pass on this issue. You can tell right off the bat where Robson Rocha came in and why we have 4 artists on this book. It's because he was so goddamn detailed on those 2 goddamn pages that he only got 2 goddamn pages done.
Well, I think in his defense, they schedule it deliberately like that. He drew the 2 lead issues because he's the strongest artist. And now the next couple of issues are going to have fill-in artists. And then the last few are going to be. Him. It's deliberately
not
like
this book was not supposed to be
scheduled.
That kind of book. Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps is built for alternating
you get to a larger point that I'll talk about it when you get to a larger
please
point.
Do but this book is not built. This was supposed to be Sam Humphries and Robson Rocha. If you can't crank out enough lead time to crank out what is it? Bi-monthly issues. Like, bi-weekly, I'm sorry. Bi-weekly issues, then you're trash.
Yeah.
You're trash.
Yeah.
You're failing me by giving me 4 fucking artists that can't put together 3 coherent pages. If that first page is horrible.
Well,
it's like, Jesus. Yeah. It's like, and not even taking away from Sam Humphries because he tried to put a little character into this issue. You cannot enjoy this issue because the art is so bad.
I mean, the teddy bear was cute. The teddy bear was at least cute.
Yeah, wait. When you see the first page, you mean the first page with Baz and Jessica, or you mean the next page right after that?
As soon as the Red Lanterns show up, you know, Jesus Christ, this is going to be a horrible.
You know,
look at Dexter.
If you don't mind, I would actually say, and I guess the recurring theme this week. I would definitely buy this issue, and I think first off, the strength of the story alone, I think, sells it. But I think Brandon's getting a good point about the art. The problem with comics that have alternating artists is something like this is because you end up with a lot of inconsistency in it, even if the writer is the same and he pumps out a script and stuff like that. You saw this a lot with all of the Batman annuals. Like, I never finished Batman and Robin Eternal, but I unfortunately did finish the annual Batman comic they did that was absolutely garbage. And every 52-week comic they've ever done that wasn't 52 was garbage. And even 52 had problems, you know, but because they don't plan around the kind of break. And as he says, it breaks the issue in a way that breaks the story flow. And this issue itself, there is an insane continuity error in it that I'm blown away that they did. And I don't know if it's supposed to be story consistent. When Baz completely heals Bleez and she's back to her old self on one page, and then the next artist takes over and she's back in her Red Lantern outfit. And I was like, okay, maybe it's growing back. But no, then 2 pages after, it's like, no, it didn't grow back because it doesn't get activated again until after she explodes. But she's standing there in her half-naked Stone Age bikini, and the next page she's wearing full armor, and it's clearly just an artist issue and stuff. And
well, I'm going to say, to be fair, in that same issue where she's wearing just her Stone Age bikini or whatever, at the very bottom of that page, she's glowing red. I'm not sure if that is, as you say,
maybe it was the colorist trying to correct the artist error.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Maybe it's the colorist trying to correct the artist error because you think he would draw at least some splashy blackness because whatever. But yeah, I think getting to the art about Tom Derenick really quick taking over, and Tom Derenick I'm really familiar with because he has that kind of Marvel art house style and like this post Joe Mad kind of flashy comic book art. And it's actually kind of funny because the second page is hilarious because of the Red Lanterns show up and they're all going, ah, like they're like, they're wearing like Halloween masks that don't move, like, ah, ridiculous. And I think Atrocitus' face looks crazy. And we've had this long conversation with the old cast about how Atrocitus has this crazy ass face because I think Philip Tan designed him by like just rubbing his elbow across the page or something. And then no one has known how to draw him since then because he doesn't have a consistent face. And this is the kind of fallout of that. Tom Derenick, who literally will just draw what the costume is in as thick as ink as possible, just draw what's on the... So it looks kind of goofy, you know? But either way, I think the story in this is really strong. I think showing Simon cure Bleez had a really... As much as it's kind of like, okay, well, blah, 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 that seems silly because her heart is gone, so she can't be turned back to normal, blah, blah, blah. But...
Well, maybe he heals her heart back to...
Yeah.
Hey, how's Jordan?
Wasn't there a whole deal where there was like you were only supposed to be able to do that with like a Blue Lantern and Green Lantern working together?
Yeah,
to heal? But,
you know, I think it's exciting that he can do that, and I think it's exciting that Simon is treated as this guy that's like, you know, the archetypal, like, I'm a badass, but then like he ultimately has super empathetic powers. Like he has, we didn't even mention that he's got some kind of prophetic power. Jeff had a hand in that, right? And then like he's also got like this mega healing power. The most interesting part for me is the next part where she tries to kill herself. And that's really kind of interesting. Like, there's no kind of hesitation, she's like, oh my God, I'm awful. And this is great for me as someone who's hated the Red Lanterns for years because they're treated as these every other issue, they're just wiping out whole planets full of people. And I like the idea that someone's like, oh my God, I'm so shitty. Like, you know, like even though I've teamed up with Green Lanterns before, what a terrible, terrible thing I've done.
But it's like, you know, sort of hand wavy off like the very next panel when Simon's like, no, man, I've done bad things.
His cooldown
is... You blow on a planet. Yeah. I've done terrible things.
You know,
I stole a car once.
A guy. Like, yeah, one time I pushed a guy on the ground when I was in fourth grade.
The Red Lancers are almost kind of like a reverse Indigo Tribe. The Indigo Tribe are horrible people that are just basically brainwashed into being, you know, good. And you got the Red Lancers who, like, are generally beforehand, some of them are bad, but some of them are people who just, like, had a moment where they just snapped. Right. And then just start doing horrible things because of the ring's influence. I was able to come out, and it's like, oh my God, what have I done?
Right, right. So I think,
Call the
yeah.
Thing
well, I mean, I definitely recognize the art issues because, you know, even with the best artists, when you're switching between a lot of different artists and a lot of different styles, it can be problematic. So when you have a lot of stuff like this where it's rushed and there's a lot of artists who may not be of the best quality, some fill-in artists, it can muddy the experience, that's for sure. I wasn't sure how to feel about the whole, oh, by the way, I can magically cure your Red Lantern-ness and also I see the future. But... you know, despite that, I enjoyed aspects of it, and it was interesting to finally see, like, how does Red Lantern feel? Like, once the ray is gone, how do they feel when there's no hate left to have? I did like that, so if it wasn't for the art, I might say a buy, but with the art or artistic issues, I'd have to give it a borrow.
Okay. Like, Name, what do you think of the issue? It's up.
Yeah, I would also probably give it a borrow. I will say, I don't think any of the art was, as you guys... I think a couple of you thought some of it was bad. I don't think any of it was really bad necessarily. I just think the fact that it was four artists with different styles, I think two of them, like two artists, I don't know which two had similar enough styles that it wasn't a huge, huge deal. But I know like, you know, obviously like the beginning of the issue and the end of the issue look completely different. And I think that's more of a problem than the art itself being bad. I think the art being so different from within the issue is the thing is, you know, if you could get somebody who at least like looked like Robson, like, you know, a knockoff Robson Rocha, like, you know, they did that a lot of times with Doug Mankey. They'd have somebody who wasn't as good a Doug Mankey type or, you know, Ivan Reis got his start as filling in for Ethan Van Sciver type stuff. So, before he then, you know, got really detailed. So I think if you had something like that, it would have been better than somebody I guess Derringer is the one who started the issue. Which looks so different from everything else in the issue. I think that's the bigger problem is that it looks so much different. This issue takes place in my hometown of St. Louis, Missouri.
I was about to ask.
Nothing what? Like St. Louis, Missouri.
I was literally about to ask you. So how was the architecture and how was the skyline for St. Louis in comparison to like
so clearly,
there.
Clearly the first picture of, you know, there, the city is somebody looked up a picture of St. Louis and was like, all right, let me draw it. But obviously, it's you know, if they're in a farm, they've got to be in Illinois, which means that's not the view they would have of St. Louis. But that's beside the point. The bigger thing is he goes into a skyscraper. There's a city ordinance in St. Louis that no building can be taller than the arch, and that building clearly should be taller than the arch.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you live in the DC universe or the real world? Because the laws are different in the DC universe. Yeah, so I'm obviously. Just letting you know. No, they're allowed to have skyscrapers.
Yep, you're right.
It's right there in the DC RPG role-playing guide from 1974.
That, right,
okay,
if you're in St. Louis, Missouri, you do not have to follow the city ordinance.
Apologies accepted, by the way. Yeah.
there's one thing. So wait, what do you give it? Do you give it a buy?
Borrow. I give it a borrow. And real quick, I will say, you know, yeah, I think the story was mostly good, but I mean, I will agree that the inconsistencies in art is an issue. Real quick, the scene where Jessica and Simon argue, I think the art is good there. I just think it's too I think it's fine. I just think it's too different. I think like Jessica's eyes, first of all, have pupils, which they don't when she's the Green Lantern. She's got the tattoo is more of a tattoo than something going out, and her nose is rounder than everywhere else. Like she has a sharp nose. Like she has a sharp nose and they drew her with a round nose. That's not how her character looked, that's all.
Can I just say super quick, my favorite part of the art of the issue was not just the part where Acrocetus shows up and he has the ridiculous Halloween mask face, but like where Simon talks about his gun. When Simon talks about his gun and he pulls out his gun.
Green.
And he
pulls
it out and maybe he makes it glow, but then he just like pulls it out. My fucking gun. Yeah. Like,
Let's not forget, I have this gun because I don't need the Green Lantern powers. It's glowing green.
Yeah.
Well, he could have made it covered by a force field, but like, it's so funny. He just like masturbates with the gun in the middle of the street. Like, oh, fuck yeah. My fucking doom dick. Oh, so good. Like, you know, like it really takes me out of the, it's Tom Derenick just doing this kind of like overly cartoony style. Good for him. But I just did really. And that cliffhanger, why is that? He just cured a Red Lantern and someone who's slightly affected by a rage is going to fight. No, thank you. We don't really need a fake ass cliffhanger. Sorry.
No, I agree.
So I would also give this issue a borrow. I did want to point out as much as the art mistakes but pretty much like the art was like takes a lot of people out of the book itself. I did want to point out the one scene that no one actually brought out, even though it's like one page, is when we see the weird clockwork steampunk guardian of the universe in the middle of someone's living room.
Oh yeah,
and he's just literally has like two different color eyes. I don't know if that's a mistake or, you know, or just,
I think that's supposed to be what he's
supposed to like. Can I say my favorite part about the melting?
What was your favorite part, Colin?
I was like, please open this place to help Jordan. Or how about that new Lantern, John Stewart? I may be behind.
I may or may not be out of the loop. Yeah, no, that's funny.
He brings up everyone but Kyle Rayner.
No, John Stewart
is a new Lantern. He's really
He just says Hal and John. So he's like,
I think they're trying to time place in there. It's a bit awkward because I can't imagine.
Doesn't really make sense in terms of canon, especially that he's one of the Green Lanterns that was, not one of the Green Lanterns, but one of the Guardians that was locked up in the whole first Lantern storyline. But it looks like that one of them. I'm not entirely sure if he is.
Oh yeah. Those fake land. That's right. The other Guardians.
The other Guardians who kept themselves sequestered away inside of a box to keep the first Lantern from killing everyone in existence or whatever.
I ran into this guy who called himself Superboy Prime, and he kept telling me about how much things were better back then.
Sorry, Frank. You said you'd give this a borrow.
I give this a borrow.
Okay. I will say real quick before we move on. The colors in this issue were also different. The previous two issues were done by I forgot to look it up, but this one was Hi-Fi, which might contribute a little bit to the difference with the previous one.
You really hate Hi-Fi, don't you?
Oh no! I'm literally not even like this. I think they were fine.
Time you bring up color is when Hi-Fi production.
That is bullshit. I always bring up colors.
Just to clarify, the colors in issue 3 were done by Hi-Fi. The colors in issue 1 and 2 were done by Blonde.
I brought up Randy Mayer so many times when he was coloring Green Lantern. Don't even fuck with me, Brandon. I talk about colors all the time.
You guys know what I think. I don't care.
All right.
But the colors make a book, especially in the Green Lantern book, which is all about colors.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And by the way, I will say, Hi-Fi used to really suck at coloring constructs, and they've gotten way better.
There you go.
No. They used to be really bad, and now they're way better. Like they used to look terrible. All right.
Nine. We got this secret to tell you. Brendan has worked at Hi-Fi for the past 12 years.
So before we move on,
for the sake of the cast,
Naim, you have something to say, right?
Yes, I have to bring up our sponsor. We are the Green Lantern Corecast is now sponsored by Audible.com. They're offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. Personally, I've used Audible for a little bit here and there. I'm probably going to start using them more now that they sponsor us. Not even going to, But I'd recommend How Star Wars Conquered the Universe. I'm sure most people like Star Wars. And it's a book about
the Star Wars, you say?
Yes, Star Wars. The Stars War is a book about sort of the history of how Star Wars became went from just this little tiny thing and a little bit delves into sort of the life of George Lucas and how he came to become the creator of Star Wars. It's a really, really interesting book. It's quite long if you want to use your free Audible credit on that. I think I think it's like 18 hours out of it or something like that. It's pretty great.
20
hours and 40 minutes. Yeah.
If I'm gonna make a suggestion, because I've gotten a few Audible books myself, a great deal that's also really enjoyable is I recommend George Carlin Reads to You, because it's all of his audiobooks combined together.
Nice, yeah.
Like so 7 hours of him reading his own comedy, and it's pretty entertaining.
That's hilarious.
So George Carlin Reads to You, or How Star Wars Conquered the Universe, which is written by Chris Taylor, narrated by Nick Podell. Again, it's 20 hours and 40 minutes. It's a great way to use your free Audible credit. And that's to download a free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/lanterns. That's audibletrial.com/lanterns for your free audiobook download.
And now back to your regular scheduled program. All right, so moving on, we're going to start discussing Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, which just came out with both its Rebirth issue and its new number one. So Green Lantern... I literally lost my train of thought because I was bringing up something.
Yeah, Rebirth was first. I guess the first issue just came out too, huh?
Yeah, first issue just came out, also Rebirth. So Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps, the Rebirth issue, Forged, written by Robert Venditti and drawn by Ethan Van Sciver. As we all know from
never
the
never heard of Green him.
Really, have you never heard of him? Have you not read Green Lantern Rebirth itself? Like this is a small title that came out a few years back. Has something to do with his
that was like 11 years ago. I was like 7.
You know, if you've never heard of Ethan Van Sciver, check conservative Twitter. You'll find him on there.
Oh my gosh. All right.
You'll find him next to Scott Adams of Dilbert fame.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
He lives not that far from, I guess, New York. He's in Jersey somewhere. Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, so as someone who has not read Green Lantern, I'm going to give this a buy. I think, and I'll get into it in a second. As anybody who has not read Green Lantern comics in the past year before this one, this was all set up previously, being old and sort of not taking over the Yellow Lanterns and then being kind of the de facto police for the universe. This was set up in Vendetti's previous run. Anybody know?
He's asking a question right now.
No.
No idea.
Sornik took over in Cullen Bunn's Sinestro run. But it wasn't really like as dramatic as you might think. He literally just said, "All right, I'm done. Sornik, you're in charge."
That is St. Louis native Cullen Bunn.
It all stemmed from the entirety that happened when the Sinestro Corps had to go to Earth and had to defend the planet Earth while the Green Lanterns went away. He recruited. This is also during the time when Superman was depowered and was just running around with a t-shirt and a pair of jeans. Pretty much had to like recruit every single superhero on the DC Universe into the Sinestro Corps. And Black Adam had something to do with it. Something about some first.
Harley Quinn, Scarecrow.
Because it reminded me, because in the beginning when it started, I was like, oh, this is a flash forward to the future. Because every time even Van Sciver gets on one of these GL books, it's like a big time issue. I'm like, oh, so this is a flash forward to the future. And then I realized like, oh shit, this is just comics I haven't read in the last couple of years. It does seem a little insane that as what I know of Sornik Mantra, that she'd be in charge of the Sinestro Corps, that they'd be considered good guys, and then Sinestro was kind of allowed to be floating. Anyway, the reason I would say this was a bias.
I was going to say, they all became good guys over the one event that happened on Earth. So Everyone else in the universe is like, hey, they all helped out Earth. We're going to treat them as good guys now.
Well, even if that is the case, I appreciate that the fact title is turning it on its head. And I think the point is that I was going to say that in terms of, I would say bye, because this issue kind of proves that this is exactly what I was saying the Rebirth issue shouldn't have been, but this is kind of the exception to the rule, because it really does take a lot of previous continuity, sets it up in a kind of interesting way. And then, I mean, as much as there was a bit of an info dump, I mean, a lot of an info dump in the middle of it, but it actually kind of takes two or three really simplistic elements and just uses them really quickly in a way that's dramatically, and then kind of keeps the story going. Sinestro has been using Parallax to power his war world. He just decides to take that energy and put it into a ring. All of a sudden, Sinestro is 10 times more dangerous than he's ever been. Hal Jordan has been using the Chrono Gauntlets to simulate Green Lantern power. And all of a sudden, he does something he's never done before, which is he makes a ring out of it. And that's two things these long-running characters could have done with the continuity and all the different stuff that Geoff Johns has set up that he's never done, that they've never done before. It still feels fresh, except maybe the Parallax thing. It still feels interesting. And it was a really cool setup. And I think the setup of Hal Jordan being the lone Green Lantern in the universe versus an army onslaught of Sinestros that are now, at this point, the most powerful they've ever been. It's a great setup. For someone, we always hear Hal Jordan is like this hotshot, loner, rogue kind of guy. This is actually a situation where that attitude is really going to serve him, you know, because essentially now he's Luke Skywalker, Han Solo versus the Empire. You know, it's the kind of thing that his character really should have been doing from the beginning. And I think, yes, Van Sciver's art, always really exciting, always really interesting. Way too detailed, his proportions are always wrong. But, you know, what he gets right is a lot better than what he gets wrong. I'm more excited than anything, really, to see that Kyle is apparently going to somehow be involved in this series, because I don't think he would have shown up on that page if he didn't. But in terms of the story, there's just not that much story. But it doesn't necessarily matter, you know, because if there's no story and it's well told, at the opposite of the Jessica Cruz issue I was complaining about, you know, then you don't need to worry about it being kind of like filler, you know, like this isn't filler. This is everything that's bad about the Rebirth's done in the best possible way, you know, under the best possible creative team, you know, and putting it out actually makes me excited for what the character's doing. And this is just someone who's so sick of Hal Jordan, so sick. I'm just, my eyeballs have puke in them. Like, I'm so sick of the character, but this is as fresh a take I think I could possibly imagine for the guy. So I'm pretty excited about this
one. Okay. I do got to say, like, before I go into it with everybody else, it's still a buy for me. It's still a buy. I love Ethan Weisskyver's, you know, work. His level, his detail and the way that he draws has always been appealing since I've, like, you know, known him in other titles, and especially in the Green Lantern Rebirth. The one thing I got to say about this book is how bringing a few things into a weird view, like certain lines that he says, like Hal Jordan, like, you know, in the space cave with the energy hammer is smashing away, making a new ring. He says, "I'll make everything right," which seems to be like a weird, almost nod to his Parallax days. You know, I'm gonna make everything right. The universe has gone astray. I'm gonna make everything right. Hal Jordan will do this. The fact that he's a lone Green Lantern now, paralleling Kyle Rayner's run, you know, the torchbearer now, the lone Green Lantern in the universe is Hal Jordan all of a sudden against, you know, the onslaught of Sinestro Corps members. it's weird. It's weird to think that now this is what the story is. This is just Kyle Rayner, but with Hal Jordan at the helm of it.
Well, yeah.
Like in my view, in my opinion, like it's just how it feels to me right now. I mean, everything else, it's still cool. I love the way the story was told. I love the little notches of, like, you know, just small little points of, like, explaining everything that's happening. You know, Kyle, you know, seeing the small, like, pick of Kyle being a White Lantern somewhere, Gianthet and Sade, you know, out there, the Green Lanterns, you know, Sinestro's whole deal with the Parallax, you know, it all visually stunning, all visually cool. And I do love it. It's a great jumping on point for, like, certain, like, you know, anyone else who has not been reading Green Lantern and now wants to jump into something. It's an interesting, like, starting of a new event. And so I do like it for that. But I do find that weird, you know, sort of parallels that I see that, you know, from certain other titles. Anyway.
It's hella confusing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hella confusing too. I mean, as it explains itself, it, like, forgets itself. Like, he's covering up for a crime, but doesn't explain what the crime is, and then says he's not really responsible for it, but he is going to make up for it. Just, it's hella confusing. It's not.
Yeah. So, Brent, what do you think?
I think you're a little biased because you're a big Kyle guy, and I think that's just a comic book thing, man. I think, not to bring up the M word, but Marvel did it with the Nova Corps. You know, they separate Richard Rider from the rest of his
Wait,
people.
Time
I'm
out.
Sorry.
Hold did on. I do it? Did you I'm just bad. Say, not to say the N word, and you meant Nova?
No. The M word. Marvel.
M. Okay. Marvel.
Okay. Oh, whoa.
Oh.
Some Novas be crazy. Some Novas be going too far. Yeah. Novas be crazy.
There's black people, then there's Novas.
Hashtag Nova.
Whoa! Boy, okay, everything was cute. Name that went too far.
That's a Chris
hashtag
Rock
Nova's
Chris
crazy.
Rock
just hashtag it. Hashtag it. If you hashtag it, people think you're being sarcastic.
Brandon, you were saying?
Is that the case? Yeah, I just think that's a comic book trope, man. Anytime you're a single character that's part of a large group of essentially the same character, The trope is to separate them and get rid of everyone else. Nova did it. Kyle did it. I feel like Batman's done it to the Justice League a million times, where they get taken out and he has to save the day all by himself. Like, it's just a comic book thing. I agree with Eric. I agree with Frank. It's by... I won't say it's a great jumping on issue because the info dump is a huge turnoff for me. Mm-hmm. But and it's not necessarily like, yo, the next issue is going to be crazy. No, it probably not. But I thought it was a decent start to a series, especially because at this point we're a month into reading other issues of other Rebirth issues. So you knew what you were going to expect. You weren't going to get a full fledged story. I think the only other DC book to treat its Rebirth issue as a number one issue was Green Arrow, ironically. Right. So I coming into this, I knew not to expect, you know, diversity from Venditti, but I knew I'd get good art, and I got that from Ethan. I guess the trick now is to hope by issue 3 and we won't get 4 artists on the book. Wow. So I good start, definitely a buy.
Okay. Colton, what do you think?
Oh yes, I definitely think it was a strong start. I was really going in, like, confused a little bit because, you know, like, I missed a lot of going on, clearly. I think I vaguely recall something about Saronic and Sinestro's, but other than that, it's like, why is Sinestro so ancient? And why is he ruling a world in the middle of a destroyed Oa? What? But outside of that, you know, it was a really exciting setup. I was really just kind of like building up, like, where Sinestro and Hal had gone and where they were going, which is nice. And they were both doing something they hadn't quite done before, and they were trying to change up their game plan a little, and I like that. It definitely led to an interesting area, and I'm curious to see, like, what comes of it. What comes of Parallax Sinestro, and what comes of Hal and his self-forged ring, if that'll have any unique properties that other Lanterns don't have.
Yeah. What about you? Wait. Did you give it a buy, borrow, rent, or pass?
Buy two copies.
Whoa.
I don't think we go that far yet.
Colton, you know, how deep are your pockets?
No, you know what? I'm going to go back to Borrow because I'm just going to take his copy and not get
it. I'm friendly like that. I totally do that.
Like, I like it, but I like saving money.
All right, Nine, what do you think of these?
Yeah, well, I mean, as everyone's sort of said, the art was obviously fantastic. You know, when you give Ethan Van Sciver the leeway time to draw the issue, he's gonna give you, you know, he's gonna put everything into it. We'll see how it goes when, because he's supposed to be alternating on this book, right? We'll see how it goes when he's an alternating regular artist as opposed to just having to, you know, do occasional stuff. But as it stands here, I think the art was fantastic. I think, you know, the story, there was a lot of stuff that I'm like, because again, like Eric, I hadn't read Green Lantern in a while, and like Colton as well. So there was some stuff that I was like, oh, what's, like, I don't know what this stuff is, but I think I agree that sort of as a rebirth, it did a good job of explaining to me sort of like what I need to know to then continue reading the book. I mean, I said again in the episode that never got released, so I should stop referencing it so much, that Rebirth was just a bad nomenclature for what they were doing here. Like, I think they should have called it something else because it's not really a rebirth. But as far as what their version of quote unquote Rebirth is doing, I think it did a good job of that and really did tell me what I need to know. And I guess, I mean, at some level, it was sort of a Hal Jordan Green Lantern Rebirth. So yeah, I think that was that. It did mostly what it wanted to do, and I quite enjoyed it. I would also give it a buy.
Okay.
But I only buy one copy.
Brandon, what are you going to ask?
Can I ask of you guys, seeing Sinestro old and decrepit, does that intrigue you? Do you want to know more about that, or does that just feel like blah?
Like him, like what made him old, you mean? Or like him
being just old? anything about him being old, does that intrigue you?
It interests me, but I think I assumed it was just the future.
Yeah, you know, I knew it wasn't the future. It interests me, but I will say, like, it's a little bit of spoiler for the next issue. The fact that it goes away, I don't care. Like, I'm not like, oh, I wish they'd kept him old. But by the way, real quick, this issue was colored by Jason Wright, and since he's not hi-fi, it didn't suck. All right.
You know, that said, I think we get into the next issue. I don't want him to stay old. I'd rather him become young. I actually am sick of Sinestro because, like, they decided a couple of years ago that
the he
Grand was Doctor
Doom. He's the greatest.
And no one can touch him at all. And, like, it was very frustrating for me. And it's one of those things where he can literally beat the entire Justice League with his eyes closed, but Hal can beat him up. And it's just one of those things that was just like, it struck me as a little, yeah, I roll your eyes a little bit. And it became this thing where it was like, oh, he was so cool and dangerous. Then it became like cool. Like, it's like, no, dude, he's not cool. He's like worse than Hitler. Like, he's like super
he's
space
worse
Hitler
than 100
times
Hitlers.
A million.
He's
yeah,
space
like,
Hitler.
He literally, like, his army is actually made up of like murder, like rapists on a genocide, on like a planet wide level. Like, that's how Blaze was made. Like, her planet was destroyed and raped to death by Sinestro Corps guys. So, like, he's not cool, guys. Like, so there's just this level where I'm sick of that kind of like character worship of Sinestro. But, I wanted him to be young again just so that he can get, like, thrashed. Like, it wasn't cathartic for me to him be this old hero and go get to die in a bed or something. So, yeah, but I like it that he's old because now even if they make him young again, there's this sense that he's older than he is, which I always thought Sinestro should be older than he is, you know? Yeah. Like, the fact that he was still as young as Hal was kind of silly.
Oh, come on. Tell me it wouldn't have been great if he stayed old man. Hal was just beating the shit up with a chair or something.
Yeah, or Kyle because he killed Kyle's mother, but whatever.
That's double team. They're both beating him to death with folded chairs.
To bring it up, just so, like, you know, if there's any question as to the backstory as to why Sinestro was at the beginning of the story, yes, it did happen to Sinestro in the Sinestro Corps or Sinestro book proper. It isn't even shown how he gets old. It is just shown in this issue. This issue literally begins that little blip into Sinestro having gray hair and old and hunched and all that stuff. The Sinestro books themselves leading up to the part where he was weakened and all that stuff, he was just literally still the exact same Sinestro, sort of coughing into his hand and going like, ah, I'm sort of weak now, and never really shown anything beyond that point. He made Serenade Matu his new appointed leader of the Sinestro Corps, did the whole thing, but till this issue, it was never really shown. The aging, the decrepancy of his body wasn't really shown to his full extent until now. But yeah, moving on to Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, number one proper, written again by Robert Benedetti and drawn by Rafa Sandova.
Rafa Sandoval.
Sandoval.
Sorry. Wait, you're Hispanic.
Listen, that is not, that's more of like Spanish.
No, you know,
That's not Dominican, all right? Yes.
I'm gonna look up Rafa Sandoval. He's gonna be Dominican. Watch, that'd be hilarious.
If he becomes Dominican, that'd be like the craziest thing to me, and I'll eat my own hat. But Rafa Sandoval is, you know, the penciler for this book, titled "The Last Lantern." Again, parallels to Green, you know, Kyle Rayner being the last Green Lantern.
Drop it.
Listen, it's there. It's just there. Right? also titled "Sinestro's Law Part 1." With Hal Jordan pretty much doing the same thing he normally does, busting up a bunch of smugglers and trying to figure out where the Green Lantern Corps had gone. This issue itself is more of, you know, it's more of a borrow for me, not really a buy. The things that happen to it, happen inside of it are again, a lot more set up, much like how, which seems more than the setup in Rebirth, is just how trying to figure out what, you know, where the Green Lantern Corps is. Doesn't really show anything from beyond that. He literally has a weird Emerald Sight Vision, much like how Simon Baz is. So apparently, that's not apparently like different now. That's or unique to Simon Baz anymore. The you see Sinestro consuming the power of Parallax again. Not different, just something to show in a different light now. We also see him get the Parallax armor and the white streaked hair, which, if anyone remembers, was seen last in Justice League during. The villain storyline, which I can't remember the name.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, what was the villain storyline that happened before the Dark Side War?
Oh, and I haven't read Justice League since the first.
Yeah, it was Justice League something or other. Like, the villains took over. This is the first appearance of the Earth 3 Justice League. You know, with
I don't know.
Ultraman and all that stuff. Well, you see Sinestro show up with the Parallax armor and the white the white streak there, which hadn't been seen at all before or since then until now. So this is either the origin of that storyline, meaning making that Justice League storyline happen during now. It's weird. I have no idea what where this falls into the timeline.
I think he's had this look before too. I feel like I've seen Doug Monkey draw it, so it probably happened at some point.
We've seen him in the Sinestro Corps uniform. Sinestro uniform. We've seen him in the Parallax uniform. We have seen that. The thing is, the white streaked hair, however, was never a thing until that Justice League storyline, and then now.
Right, they decided he was old now.
Yeah. So since since consuming his power, Parallax's power, putting it in check, rejuvenating his body, but still keeping the white streaked hair, much like how Hal Jordan had the white streaked hair during his tenure as Parallax, it's cool as a visual, it's a nice visual cue, but you know the whole him just becoming again space alert, showing up, talking a lot of stuff to the Sinestro Corps and telling them to now instill fear, which is their job since the beginning, hasn't changed. This new Sinestro law is just double down on the exact same law he's already has implemented. Is nothing new to me. This is all like just the same stuff. The only real catch is that by the end of the issue, the Green Lantern Corps shows back up. Now, what does that mean? And if anyone had been reading Green Lantern Edge of Oblivion, we know or speculate that Hal Jordan was the cause for the Green Lanterns to being trapped on the other side of the Source Wall in the previous universe that preceded theirs. So we don't know if that's going to be still implemented or if that's still going to be a thing. Or if that's still going to be, even brought up. The fact that it's just, you know, stuff. Again, Edge of Oblivion was never supposed to be just short. It's supposed to be an ongoing series until Rebirth happened. So a lot of things got left in the wind. A lot of things got left in the air. No one knows what's going to go down with these hanging plot threads. Again, it's a borrow for me. Not that it's good, but not that great. The artwork is sharp. I do love the artwork. But yeah, Naim, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree that it's probably a borrow for me, which sucks because I agree that the artwork was sharp. I think the artwork was really, really good. I know Ben Castrita, who writes the reviews for the site, tweeted that Ethan Van Sciver and Rafa Sandoval might be the best 1-2 punch for artists for DC Rebirth, and I think that's probably you know, not too far off base because I think you know, again, these two issues were definitely really, really good looking. But I will say, I think the story for this was, I mean, not really a ton happened, right? Like, it was definitely seemed like a filler issue, which is, like, for an issue one, shouldn't really. Like, this felt sort of sort of like what you guys were saying, issue two of Green Lanterns was. So that's all. Like I wish that that the story had sort of done more as opposed to just been, you know, a couple of scenes of Hal Jordan like, yo, I'ma go beat some Sinestros, hell yeah. And then the Green Lantern show up at the end and we don't really know what what's up there.
Oh, God.
By the way, the colorist here was Tomio Mori, who's not Hi-Fi. No, I'm sorry.
When you said that, I just had the mental image of Steve Buscemi as Hal Jordan. Hello there, fellow young people.
That would be amazing. I wanna watch that movie.
I mean, at this point, he sort of is.
You know what? That issue where he like breaks in like the second page of this, he kind of looks a little bit Buscemi-esque. By the way, Rafa Sandoval was born in Nicaragua.
So not Dominican Republic.
Not Dominican Republic, but not that far.
Isn't it weird that we can find out where he was born and he's just a comic book artist? I mean, ew.
Oh, shit. Someone's having, like, future issues right now. Like, oh. All right, so. Magnus, how do they work?
Pablo Sandoval, baseball player, was born in Venezuela.
No one cares.
Oh, that's
no
so
cares.
Interesting.
Just saying.
So
just saying.
No one cares.
Look,
Dalton, what do you think?
Dude, don't fucking mess up Brandon anymore. He just found out, like, the internet happened. Don't fucking...
Dalton, what do you think of this?
Yes, really, I feel like this book's gone a really good start. I think that's really important. I mean, yes, we've all had our moments where we're like, you know, Hal Jordan was great at first. He's like, okay, we're kind of getting tired of him. I feel like this is breathing a little bit of life back into the guy, and I felt a little bit of that bits and pieces towards once Geoff Johns left. Not offense to him as a writer, but he clearly ran his course some time ago. So it just felt good to get a breath of fresh air. And I feel like this is kind of part of that where it's like, sometimes it can just do a character wonders just to have let someone else have a time writing them. And I think the long run, this will benefit both Hal and Sinestro. I definitely recommend buying this.
Okay. Before I go to Brandon, I just realized at the very last, like a few pages into the end where you say the Green Lantern Corps, one of them is a Space Godzilla. That's as a member of the Green Lantern Corps. I don't know why that's important to me, but
you don't remember that issue, Space Godzilla.
That's Space Godzilla. Yeah, not even why that's important, but it's pretty funny as a Godzilla Green Lantern Corps member. Anyway, Brandon, what do you think?
I think you are all making me out to be the fucking bad guy tonight. This is a buy. This is a clear buy.
You and Colvin both said buy.
I have hope.
He just can't hear Colt when he speaks.
I didn't say it was bad.
That's most people.
What? There's nothing wrong with this issue. This is a number one issue. This is a number
okay,
one
Brandon,
issue.
Okay, Brandon, sell me on this issue. Sell me into like my purchase of just borrowing it off of you, who's clearly buying it. So.
And then I'll chop it right down. Don't worry about it.
You had the best issues, okay?
Brandon, again, sell me on it. Sell me
I'm
on
pointing
it.
My thumb out like a politician right now. The art was amazing.
We
all agreed that Rafa knocked it out the park. Nime already mentioned how the colorist was on point. I told Ben that if he doesn't mention the colorist in this issue, I'm going to kick his ass. And I didn't read it, so I don't know if I need to kick some ass or not. But the colorist was amazing in this. I thought the constructs looked better than they have in years. Like the art was just that damn good. And whether Hal Jordan stumbles upon a overarching gigantic plot or not, there's nothing wrong in this issue. We found out who Hal Jordan was. We found out just what his character is like. He's brash, he's cocky, and he's goddamn good at it. The Green Lantern Corps is back from God knows where. We're going to find that out later. Those are questions that are to be answered later. Everything doesn't need to be answered in one issue. I thought we got a good buildup of Sinestro. We got a good idea of who Hal Jordan is. His name is on the fucking cover now. That's what this book is about.
In the book itself, so I know his name is Hal Jordan.
Exactly. Right. Well, I felt like everything you should want out of a first issue was accomplished in this issue. Well, and none of it was done to a fault. There was no gigantic info dump. There was no Hal Jordan repeating his name over and over like we got in the Rebirth issue. We got Hal Jordan kicking ass, looking good, taking names, and we got Sinestro being fucking awesome What the fuck else do you guys want?
Right. Okay. So here's the thing. Eric, I want to buy it. I want to buy it because I liked it. It's definitely a borrow. And the thing about it is that everything that happens in this issue, okay, there's two things, right? First off, the issue sets up this really cool idea that Hal Jordan is out there. He's kicking ass. He's doing all by himself. He's going – like he's stopping even smugglers, petty crimes. Then they establish, you know, Sinestro, got Parallax power, recontrols his army. That's going to be awesome. Everything's cool. The guy shows up and is like, hey, Hal, we're 1,000 and you're one. And Hal's like, yeah, let's do it, buddy. The fact that he rhymes is silly. But like the fact that he's like, let's get it going. I'm like, this is exciting. You turn the next page and they literally – on the premise in a bathtub. Like the first thing that happens is every single Green Lantern you've ever seen from every other Mogo's back. John Stewart's back. Guy Gardner's back. That cool all the lizard guy's back. The Marine guy's back. The fucking chipmunk is back. So all of a sudden the entire premise of the book, which was exciting in the rebirth, where it was Hal made the ring by himself and alone he's gonna bring out the galaxy. And you know, Sinestro is back to kicking ass and stuff like that. Such a cool concept, and now gone, because all of a sudden it's the Green Lantern Corps versus Sinestro Corps again, which means that this just became a fucking retread series. It's the same thing we've seen a million times in the past 10 years. It's just more Sinestro guys versus more Hal guys. More Sinestro. And the thing about it, the only thing that you take that part out of the issue, it's an exciting issue. If you take that part of the issue, it's cool because it keeps the premise going and it stays exciting. If you take the Sinestro part of the issue and just plug it into Rebirth, Rebirth all of a sudden becomes a perfect comic. But what happens when you take away the surprise ending and the shit that was just left over from Rebirth? You have nothing in this issue besides Hal fighting some smugglers. We didn't need – but the problem with it is that it's kind of like – it's just like a necessary evil of an issue. It's hard to get excited about a necessary evil of an issue. Like, we see Hal do cool stuff. He does cool stuff. Had to happen in the first issue. We reestablish Sinestro as evil. We kind of just finish off from Rebirth. So essentially it works as a kind of epilogue or – another two pages of Rebirth, but then again, the premise is blown completely out of the water in the last page. I am not remotely excited about those Green Lanterns comebacks. Like, it doesn't. I know that the whole premise of the title is Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, so they had to come back, you know. But it's like it sucks that they did, because what was cool about the title for the first time ever was that Hal seemed cool because he really was the only guy out there. Contrary to Frankie, like I do like Kyle Rayner better, but if you take the Green Lanterns. Kyle Rayner is the one with the least high concept personality. Like, you can explain who Guy Gardner is, who John Stewart is, and who Hal Jordan is in like 2 seconds. And out of the three of them, Hal Jordan is the most interesting one that you could pit against an entire universe of bad guys, right? Kyle Rayner is cool, but he does not have a one sentence, you know, origin. Like, Hal Jordan is like, hey, you like Malcolm Reynolds? Hey, you like this guy, fucking army of evil dudes? You're like, that sounds awesome. I'm going to buy that. And then at the end of the issue, they're like, nah. Concept is not what you thought it was. It's just the same shit you've seen a million times. But what's gonna happen now? Sinestro guys are gonna fight Green Lantern guys. Green Lantern guys are gonna fight Sinestro guys. And then Hal is now given this ultimate power. It's like, oh, so now Sinestro is as powerful as Parallax, but now Hal is super powerful. Can't believe they killed their premise so quickly in the first issue just to say, hey, this is the generic Green Lantern comic. I'm not excited about it.
I mean, the book is called Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, right? So I guess it's weird. It's more weird that they introduced a premise in the first issue that clearly wasn't going to be the premise of the book, right? In the Rebirth issue, which wasn't the first issue. This is the first.
Well, you know, one could argue that they've at least changed up how it's set, because before the Sinestro Corps was the fringe, was the bad guys, but right now they're the large group. They're in control. They've got the center of the universe. And what's up to the Green Lanterns? Like, Hal and plus 20 at most lanterns that just came out.
Yeah, they
out
outnumber
the
them
the
a little
time.
Bit. And it's, just because they outnumber them doesn't necessarily change the paradigm. I mean, it makes it more exciting in terms of good guys versus bad guys. But, like, people forget. I mean, the Sinestro Corps War was awesome. Everybody thought it was super awesome. It was, like, 12 years ago. Like, you know, like. And since then, Green Lantern has just been trying to do a storyline like that.
I'll say two things real quick before we wrap. While I did love the Sandoval art, the last panel, John's face looks really weird. I don't think what it should look like. And the last thing is, I did a quick control F of the word color in Ben's review on the site. Not there. So you got to kick his ass.
Oh, guy kicks some ass.
And on that note, this has been the Green Lantern Corps podcast. And, those are our thoughts on the issues, that came out. Green Lanterns 1-3, Hal Jordan Rebirth, and Hal Jordan number one. Also the news that just recently came out from San Diego Comic Con. Again, were you excited about, you know, the Justice League teaser that they showed? Were you excited that Atrocitus is now in Injustice? Are you excited with the issues that just came out with, the Green Lantern and Hal Jordan? You know, let us know at the Green Lantern Corps, you know, .com. just on the forums there. You can just hit us up. Let us know exactly what you think of the issues. If you think Brandon should kick Ben's ass because he didn't put the colors on his review, let us know that too.
It's going to happen.
aside from that, this has been Frankie Mateo from the Green Lantern Corps podcast, along with my cohorts here. Stay green.
Be sure to check us out at www.thegreenlanterncorps.com. You can email us at contact@thegreenlanterncorps.com, follow us on Twitter @theGLCorps, or reach our voicemail line at 313-GL1-2814. That's 313-451-2814. Check out Kirby Crackle, performers of our opening theme, Ring Capacity, at www.kirbycracklemusic.com, and the Roy Clark Method, performers of our ending theme, Sector 2814, at royclarkmethod.webs.com.
I have this magic green. It is the color green. It can do anything. Sometimes it speaks to me and says, how? What?